Blog Talk Radio.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world. Those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very, very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, doesn't it? I think so. Well, we have an exciting show planned for you today, so stay tuned. Certified professional coach and caregiving without regret expert, Michael Bloom, who has energized hundreds of caregivers with soul-saving coping strategies that support them in saving lives, including. So you do not want to miss this interview. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Oh, yeah, and they're also kind of very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out. When they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason they tell you all that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that is to go through the grief process. You can't go around it. You can't go over it. You've got to go through it. So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast, my books, my videos, my blog. I know what you're thinking. It sounds like it's all about me, but it's not really. It's actually all about you. So just go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, caregiverscaregiver.com, and check us out. Okay, I would like to take this moment in the show and thank my last week's guest. Oh, wait, it was me. Yes, I was my last week's guest. We did something a little differently last week. So thank you, Dave, for filling in. No problem, Dave. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now. Welcome to the show, Michael. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that stuff for our first-time listeners. Are you there?
I am. It's so great to be here with you. Thanks so much for the invitation. I think it's okay for you, Dave, to talk about you because you're a pretty heroic caregiver yourself. So I say you're a good role model for others, and I'm so glad that you're doing this for fellow caregivers who definitely need the support to hear the messages that will help them sidestep burnout and certainly deal with grief. What you bring up about grief is so important because we don't just experience grief when someone passes. I think grief is a companion along the caregiving journey as well.
Wow, Michael, I did not see that compliment coming. I can usually see them coming, but thank you. That was kind of a left hook, but a nice one. Thank you so much. And thank you for allowing me to interview you today. I really appreciate it. Why don't you begin by telling us a little about yourself and your book, and how did you get started? How did it come about? In other words, just who is this guy, Michael Bloom?
Sure. Well, be my pleasure to do so. My journey of as a primary caregiver started in 2009. At that time, I'm an only child, and my parents were elderly. And my dad in 2009 had been, at that point, serving as the primary caregiver for my mother since 2004, about 5 years. And as a 77-year-old woman, she was diagnosed with stage 4B Hodgkin's lymphoma after a shocking collapse.
Wow.
In a Walmart, actually. And she went to the
Oh, my
hospital, got
gosh.
diagnosed. There were no signs prior to that. And she got paired up with a wonderful oncologist, but who was concerned that the chemotherapy might actually kill her before the cancer did. But my mother decided to go
Wow.
forward with the treatment. She wanted to stay with us, and she was a miraculous cancer survivor. But on the other side of treatment, she ended up becoming very frail. She had neuropathy, had really bad balance issues, and needed full physical support in the household. And my dad lovingly provided that support for the next 5 years. And one summer day in 2009, actually, it's about in August of 2009, I got a frantic call from my mother because my dad, who always prepared their breakfast every morning, got their medication, came down late and seemed confused and refused to get everything prepared. So that prompted her call to me. I lived about 5 miles apart at that time. So I threw on some clothes, hopped in my car. It was early on a Sunday morning and drove over. I was actually going over that day anyway because my dad had talked to me the day before. He had gone banking and food shopping and said he picked up, I'm an only child, he picked up some extra groceries for me. He always liked to spoil me. So I was heading, like I said, I was heading over to figure out what was going on. I got to the house. I immediately went to find him. He was in his home office. When I went into the room, kind of slumpy in his chair. I thought he had a stroke, so I called 911. EMTs came out. We discovered he had a heart rate of 25. Took him to the hospital. A temporary pacemaker was put in. They stabilized the heart issue, but after a little more investigation, this event probably happened while he was asleep. The night before is when it started. He had significant oxygen deprivation to the brain, so he ended up with vascular dementia and would never get his mind back after that. So
Oh my
he would
God.
say he could no longer be a primary caregiver. So as an only child, I immediately stepped in, and the title of my book, The Accidental Caregiver Survival Guide, actually came from the idea that many caregivers enter the caregiving role unexpectedly, accidentally. Usually there's some
Sure.
sort of health crisis, injury, one of our treasured veterans returning from war with an injury, not expected to happen. So, and it's sudden. And I like to equate the care entry to the caregiving role kind of like a swimming pool. Some of us like to dip our toes in the water to make sure that it's comfortable before we get into the pool. But when it comes to health crisis with your loved one, there's no time to test those waters. You jump into the deep end of care, and your life's never the same. And that's what happened with me. So from that day forward, I became the primary caregiver for both of my parents. It was a several-year journey. My
Wow.
father passed first. My mom passed in 2012. I launched my home-based caregiver coaching and consulting business while still caring for her, so I have the flexibility to work part-time and care for her. After my mom passed, I started doing some writing. I actually had an essay published called Parent Caregiving Without Regret in the Gratitude Book Project of 2013, and that prompted me into more writing, and then the book came about. So, and I've been doing coaching ever since for caregivers, and it's been a really great journey, but I feel like I honor my parents' legacy through my work. So that's how I came to be.
Wow. Wow. So how old are you, or how old were your parents when you were born?
My parents had me at the age of 42. So they were older parents. When they had me. I'm an only child. So they, you know, ended up being in their 80s when they passed away. So my dad, you know, not long after that incident, and then for a number of months I cared for him, and my mom was 85 when she ended up passing away. So she got 8 extra years from her treatment, but then the cancer, unfortunately, after 8 years came back and was not curable at that point. So, and that's what took her. So actually Mother's Day 2012. But both of them had the ability to age in place and pass with dignity here at home. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, good for you. So I didn't do the math. So how old were you when you became a caregiver?
40. I was 40. So, yeah, when I became 40. A caregiver. If I had known that my 40th birthday year would have been marked by so much strain, I would have dreaded it. I actually embraced turning 40, but that ended up being one of the most challenging years of my life. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife had a stroke when she was 52. I was 42, and that was 20 years ago, and I'm sure glad that nobody told me the road that I was going to have to travel on. It's nice to just have a need-to-know basis, just one day at a time. I think knowing too much is more than the average new caregiver can handle, and, you know, I remember at the hospital, doctors were just looking at me like, oh my God, this poor guy. And, you know, everyone I would meet, every new doctor, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, it's like, well, what's the big deal? This will be over pretty soon. Fix her, you know?
Right.
But I guess that's called denial, which is a good survival technique, a good defense mechanism. So sometimes denial is a good thing.
Yeah. Well,
why is your... Why is your book so important for people to pay attention to? And you have more than one book, don't you?
I have the book for caregiving. I actually have another book that I just published that has to do with online marketing on Google Hangouts, which has been another niche area because I've really had such success with marketing for my book, my first book, and just really building my coaching business that so I have a book called Hangouts Marketing Mastery that came out just within the last couple months. So that's really good. But getting back into caregiving, the reason the caregiving book, Accidental Caregiver Survival Guide, is so important really has to do with the subtitle that brings it up, which is your roadmap to caregiving without regret. I find in my work with caregivers, there are two main regrets that tend to dominate the caregiver's world. And one is regret for things they may say or do during the caregiving journey that they wish they could take back after their loved one passes. I cannot tell you how many people I've encountered that end up in tears after some of the speaking engagements I do because of this guilt that they live with, this regret that they live with for those things. And one of the things I want caregivers to know that are listening is embrace your humanness. Embrace the choice that you're making. Forgive yourself along the way. You and your loved one are walking hand in hand through some of the scariest experiences that we'll ever have in life. And when we're experiencing fear, emotions do understandably get the best of us, and sometimes we may lash out. And those that we lash out with are those we're most comfortable with. And it often tends to be the caregiver and the loved one receiving care. The key just to get through those is to seek forgiveness and also be forgiving to yourself. I'm not excusing anybody who is irregularly abusing or neglecting somebody they're caring. This does not fall into that category. Yeah. But to give you an example of that, even me, I'm a very patient person, but when I was in the midst of first caring for my parents and barely getting any sleep, My mother was used to telling or bossing my dad around in her kitchen when she couldn't do it herself, and he graciously took that. When I was trying to deal with all the things that had to do with their care, how I loaded a dishwasher was not very important to me. How I loaded a dishwasher was very important to her. One particular day, I snapped back at her because of the criticism of how I loaded the dishwasher, and I felt bad about it. I thought, later on, I sought forgiveness and brought it up. My mother said to me, "I don't even know what you're apologizing for." It didn't bother her when I had that reaction. The reason I bring this story up is sometimes we feel regret for things we do or say that the loved one may not, unless you bring it up and discuss it, you have no way of knowing. It may not have impacted. So communication is key. The other regret people experience as caregivers is putting their life on hold, passing up on personal or professional development opportunities because they're all in for their loved one. The journey of supporting somebody with Alzheimer's or another form of dementia or Parkinson's disease could be a decade or more. Nobody deserves to sacrifice a full decade of their lives or years. Your loved one wants you to live fully too. So pursue dreams. Do things outside the caregiving role. It will make you a better caregiver and sustain you to be in the role for much longer.
I have to commend you for pursuing a business, because a lot of caregivers just think that they're in caregiver prison and they can't have a hobby, they can't have an interest, they can't start a business and do it all. Now, it does take a lot of organization, granted, and it's probably not something you're going to do during your year of caregiving, but it could be. Usually the more organized people tend to fare better in caregiving than the unorganized people. So you want to get some books while you're being a caregiver on how to be organized, how to organize your life, how to organize your environment around you, etc. And the other thing you said about regrets, you know, a lot of caregivers make promises to their care receivers. It's typical, like, "I'll never put you in a nursing home," you know, and then they realize, "Oh my gosh, that's not a realistic promise." And it would be better if you already made that mistake, go back and say, "You know, I promised I'd never put you in a nursing home, but I should have promised that I will make sure you get the best care available. And if I can no longer provide the best care for you that's in your interest, then I will find you the best nursing home in America so that you get the best care." You know, and a lot of people just let it eat them alive that they made promises that they can't keep. And another thing about regret that I noticed is don't let that regret eat you up inside. Like I said, get it out. You know, don't keep things inside, because that's how cancer starts, when you just internalize everything. So great comments you made there. Well, let me get on to my next question.
Sure, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I don't want to.
I wanted to add something to what you say, because it's so important. Regret is such a big, I think, companion sometimes for caregivers. Embrace the choice that, you know, again, that you're making to serve. Also, if you have made such a promise, and I think it's really wonderful what you suggested to work through it. Don't say never to anything. And also, no decision that you make a lot of times for supports or living situations are not irreversible. And one of the great things that I suggest to some caregivers that I work with, even if you never, ever plan to use a nursing home, explore other residential options while you both are still able to do that and you're not in an emergency. Because most placements take place due to some urgent issue, usually having to do with either the death or the incapacitation of the primary caregiver. If I had not been around, my mother would have immediately ended up in some nursing home. Without pre-planning, looking, it would have been an emergency.
Right.
Do some investigation. Have places, try them out for respite for a few days or a week. You know, most residential environments love and provide respite beds. Try it out, see how the environment is, then you know where one could go, because one out of five primary caregivers dies before the person they're caring for. So important to know what the next possible step could be, even if you never use it.
Yes, my mother has dementia. She's 92. And we had to finally find a place for her. First, she was living in her own home with her sister. And then that didn't work out. So then she had to go into now there's assisted living and there's independent living. So she went to independent living and that worked for a little while. And then she started getting worse. And then we had to put her in assisted living. And then she had a fall and then she went into a nursing home. But the point is, like you say, don't wait till you're in an emergency, because in an emergency, they will just stick them in the first nursing home that will take them. And that may not be the best one. So you want to do things like see if she qualifies for Medicaid, because finances is a big deal. My mom was in a place that would normally cost over $3,500 a month, and nobody in our family could afford that. But we qualified her for Medicaid first, and in many cases, it's not that big a deal getting your loved one qualified for Medicaid, because they typically don't own anything anyway, or they own very little, and you can slowly take the assets out of their name. I mean, if you're handling all their bills anyway, then they don't really need any assets. Or if they're living in a home that might be in a reverse mortgage or what have you. So doing what you suggested and doing your homework first, going, visiting nursing homes, visiting independent living, visiting assisted living, see if they pass the smell test, etc. You want to make decisions that are based on not a urgent emergency situation, because that never turns out good.
Thank you.
And again, I will go back to my next question. Reports show that we have approximately 65 million caregivers in the United States, and some say it's as high as 100 million, actually. Who are these people, and how do they become caregivers typically? Yeah, I know it's never planned, and you know it wasn't on their resume, caregiving. They were just kind of thrust into it. Explain that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, their caregivers come to be in many ways. Either a spouse or elder parent becomes, suddenly ill, or you know, has a health crisis. One of our treasured veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan with an injury. There's over a million Americans caring for someone, one of our servicemen or women that have been injured. You know, traumatic brain injury from, you know, a sporting incident or, you know, car crash, giving birth to a special needs child. There are so many different reasons why people step up to the plate to care. Another statistic that's interesting is in terms of elder care, for every person over the age of 80 today, there's about 7 younger people potentially that could provide care for them in some capacity. By 2030, that ratio is going to go to 4-1 based on population demographics, the trends. And by 2050, that ratio will be 3-1. Okay, now, that's alarming to me.
Caregiver shortage.
Caregiver shortage. I'm not so alarmed, because the reason I'm bringing this up is many caregivers, many family caregivers care for more than one person at a time. So they may be caring for an elder parent and a spouse, or a special needs child and an elder parent, or a few special needs children. So many caregivers are caring for more than one person. The thing to understand with this statistic is younger people need to not be shielded from caregiving. It's time for caregivers to come out of the caregiving closet, share what they're doing, and to really train up younger members of their families to know that this is happening. When I address college groups, I say look to your right and look to your left, much like a law school dean or a medical school dean might say, because one out of three of you won't be here graduation day. I say look to your right, look to your left, because one out of three of you will be a caregiver. Start getting the information now. Yeah. Involve younger family members in caregiving responsibilities so they understand it can step up when the time comes.
Yeah, it's like I said at the beginning of the show, there's three types of people in the world. Those that will become a caregiver, those that will need a caregiver, and those that are a caregiver, but you know what I'm saying.
I do know what you mean. Yes. Everybody's going to either need a caregiver, become a caregiver, you know, so definitely everybody will in some way be touched by caregiving. And I think most people are today. They, just about everyone knows at least one person that's involved in family caregiving. And if we didn't have the commitment and the dedication of family caregivers, our economy really would go bust. I mean, there's, you know, besides the fact that there's 65 to 100 million caregivers out there, there's, you know, estimates of $450 billion worth of unpaid support that's being provided by these people on an annual basis. That's pretty incredible.
I know. Wow. It is. And Social Security does help in certain cases. They will actually give the person Social Security check or give additional Social Security to the caregiver for caring for them, because they would have to do it if that caregiver wasn't there anyway. So there are many, many ways to help supplement caregiving. Just check with Social Security, check with your state, etc. Finances doesn't have to be a disabling factor. Now, AARP, everybody knows who they are, released a study in 2013 that showed some concerning trends regarding the future of elder care. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, and it really, and the study that you're referring to is the one that talked about these ratios in terms of going to 3-to-1, 4-to-1, and then 3-to-1 ratios of younger people available to care for elders over the age of 80, because our population, life expectancy is increasing, and it is a concern because, I mean, people are worried about Social Security and Medicare potentially running out of money because of the numbers of people that will enter, you know, needing them because of living longer and just the baby boomers, you know, moving into senior boomer categories. So I'm concerned, but I'm not overly concerned because, again, I think caregivers will step up to the plate to care for multiple family members. And it's really vital that we share much more. Like the show that you're doing is so important for people to really understand how much caregiving is weaved into the fabric of our society, and that it's so important that caregivers get the support that they need to sustain themselves in the role, so that people don't go into more costly living alternative, support alternative as well.
I loved what you said about training young people up, you know, kids. I mean, you're never too young to start doing caregiving because kids can help. You know, 5-6-year-olds, like I said, either you're going to become a caregiver, you are a caregiver, or you're going to need a caregiver. So let's get back to the present. What are the current? And kids make great caregivers, by the way. They just, you know, they're empathetic. They're caring. You know, certain type of temperaments are more geared toward caregiving because, you know, you can have siblings, 3, 4, 5 siblings, and ultimately one is the only one who steps up and says, I'll do it. You know, the other one, oh, I can't, you know, it's not my thing. I bear to see her looking like that. I live too far away. You know, I'd love to do it, but I live, 500 miles away. I can't do it. Sorry. So unfortunately, you talk about regret, keeping things inside. A lot of people have bad things about their siblings because they feel like they're not doing enough. Or they feel like, you know, it's like when everyone goes to dinner and everyone chips in the money and whoever is in charge of paying the bill is left with the shortage. And that's how caregivers are, because it's often the child or the sibling with the most empathy and the most sympathy and the most wonderful temperament who gets stuck doing the caregiving and they're alone and they don't know how to ask for help. And there are many ways to ask for help, even from those siblings who claim that they're not good caregivers. You know, okay, you can't do it, then send money, you know, or you can come once a month for 5 hours or one day to provide respite. Don't let those guys off the hook. There are things that they can do regardless of their excuses, right?
There are
the greatest challenges for caregivers today.
Yeah, it is one of the greatest challenges, and it's actually something I talk about in the Occidental Caregiver Survival Guide. I'm an only child, so it was a blessing and a curse. So
lucky you.
The curse was I was on my own, really felt alone at times until I realized I could get support from other people as well and make a plan for it. That, you know, and then the blessing was I had nobody to argue with or fight with or, you know, be upset with or let down by. But one of the things that when I coach other caregivers is it's really a personal choice you make. To serve, and nobody has to serve.
Right.
You're making a choice. Okay, there could be consequences. So your sibling who chooses not to do things, you can be upset with them, but the anger is only eating you up. and it's only taking energy away from other things that you're doing. One of the best ways to get people to help that I have found is make a list of everything you're doing on a daily basis, a weekly basis, monthly as needed. Make a list of all the activities. Not everything is direct caregiving. Some things could be household, you know, related needs to maintain the household. Make that list. Share your list with the siblings, the family members, the friends from church, others who may ask you how they can help. Let people self-select what they can do. One of the biggest mistakes people make is they direct other people. So that, you know, older sister who's the caregiver is telling younger sister or younger brother, I want you to do this here. Okay, well, when that is said, whatever reason, there's resistance. If you provide a list of things for people to choose from, then they're more likely to step up to the plate and choose something they feel they're capable of doing and that they can do. And once somebody who typically hasn't done much does something, reward them, reinforce them, share a lot of gratitude. It'll make it more likely to do it again. I've found this in a number of situations where I've coached that it is possible. Communication is the leading breakdown that causes these things to happen. And there's lots of family history, lots of history between people that often gets in the way emotionally from taking care of what needs to be done in the moment and now. So
that's a great way Excellent point. You know, I'd like to say that unforgiveness or resentment or things that you internalize, you think you're hurting the other person, but you're only hurting yourself. I like to say it's like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. And they're having a great time. You know, all of that resentment and unforgiveness is not affecting them in the least, but it's killing you. It's rotting your bones.
And in situations where you're the one caring for a parent and the parent is the parent of both you and the sibling you have an issue with and you're bitching and complaining about the situation in this negative energy, you're only hurting the situation of you and your parent or loved one you're caring for in your household. Because again, the person that's not there is not hearing all of this. So don't waste your energy on that. Seek support from people who are willing to provide it, but give them a choice. Let people choose what they can do. There's so much to be done. Certainly people can find something.
And there's so many dynamics going on. I like to call it the Tommy Smothers syndrome. You know, mom always liked you best. And you might find that the favorites are going to get favorable treatment. You say, well, you know, what about so-and-so? They never do anything. Oh, come on. She's had a rough life. Leave her alone. You know, and that kind of stuff can eat you up inside as well. Well, listen, we've still got a lot of things to talk about, but I want to take a quick break. So don't go away. We'll be right back. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive godly attitude, and I look forward to that day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. And I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchase it on the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your copy. Just go to OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. That's OneArmOneLeg100Words.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to take our short quiz to help you assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And if so, where you are in the burnout process. And just for doing that, Dave will send you a special gift. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast on his website. Go to CaregiversCaregiver.com. That's CaregiversCaregiver.com. And now, let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And we are back with certified professional coach and caregiving without regret expert Michael Bloom. Michael, welcome back.
Glad to be back with you.
This is a great interview. Thank you so much again for doing this. What are the signs of caregiving burnout? That's a biggie. And how can caregivers avoid it?
Sure, great question. Before you get to burnout, it's usually stress that gets us to burnout. And, you know, stress is very much kind of like a balloon. You know, a balloon, you can put so much air into it, and if it goes too far, it pops. And the same thing with our stress reservoir. Our stress reservoir, you know, could build up to a certain level, and then all of a sudden it'll burst out, and it leads to a breakdown or burnout. And it's important to think about some of the signs of stress. You know, having trouble sleeping. You know, lots of caregivers have, you know, struggled to sleep maybe because of the needs, the care needs of their loved one that may wake them up several times during the night, or they have trouble falling asleep because they can't get their mind chattered to shut down. And a great way to cope with that is, I found, is to make a list of those things that are in your head on a piece of paper at a nightstand and give yourself permission to focus on them the next day. I mean, it's not good unless it has to, emergency has to happen in the moment. So trouble sleeping, lack of sleep over time really leads to some, you know, really puts stress on the body, both physically and emotionally. Eating.
Great idea.
Many caregivers, you know, will eat more, some will eat less. So change in eating habits, becoming more sedentary. You know, many caregivers have a decrease in their own health, you know, in their own physical health and emotional health through caregiving, because again, they may be more homebound and don't do the things that don't enjoy activities that they used to enjoy. And even for those that maybe could take time to enjoy activities, people who found hobbies or other interests may lose interest. And if a caregiver seems to have this, seems to be just rolling along, you know, feeling, you know, no energy, low energy, no interest in doing certain things, not engaging with friends in ways they used to, that could be a sign, a serious sign of stress. Also, a person that may lash out in anger or have outbursts much more frequently than they ever were known to have done before could be a great sign that burnout is, you know, just around the corner. You know, turning to illicit drugs or alcohol as a form of, coping with self-medication could be another sign that burnout is emerging. Any, you know, headaches, stomach problems. What I say to really combat burnout is first take care of yourself. Let your primary care physician know that you're caregiving. It's so important to communicate that because doctors know that caregiving can bring stress. Deal with your own issues as they come up. The better you take care of yourself, the more you're going to be able to sustain your energy and be there to care for your loved one. Because again, one out of five primary caregivers actually passes before the loved one they're caring for. My dad was one of those stats. Not to say that he didn't do a good job of, you know, doing things for himself, but we never expected, given my mother's health conditions, that he would be the one to pass before her, and that did happen. Sure. So check with your doctor. Take care of burnout before you become overcome, or God forbid, you're gone. Take care of yourself.
Now, your book provides a roadmap to caring without regret. Why that subtitle, and what are some of the main strategies that you could share with my listeners to be successful caregivers? What is a successful caregiver? Just to survive? Or is it beyond?
Yeah, I know. I think a successful caregiver is one, and I mentioned the regrets kind of at the beginning of the interview when we talked about the book, but to be a successful caregiver, it's really about doing what you're doing, the care for your loved one for the long term. Admit that you are human. You can make mistakes. It's certainly going to happen. Forgive yourself, but also pursue things outside the caregiving role. Give yourself some respite time. If there's things that you want to do personally or professionally, find support. So don't just get support to meet your loved one's needs. Get support to help take care of your loved ones so you could do things. You know, you brought up, Dave, that was really amazing that I had started a coaching business in the midst of providing care. One of the reasons I did that was after my dad passed and after I survived shingles and had a bit of an epiphany, I realized that I needed to get off of caregiver isolation island and seek, you know, grab that torch, unlike Survivor, grab the torch and run off of that island, get help, because then I pursued life coach training. I did something I never expected, which was to go away for training retreat weekends. I actually found friends and family members that would stay with my mom, and my mom ended up being okay with that. In fact, I had, you know, a bunch of female friends and family members that were willing to rotate. They'd have girls weekends. So it ended up being fun for her and ended up giving me a break, you know, something I never really thought of before. So there's a way to do this. Sure. You can build and do things for yourself that could still be meaningful for your loved one, because you don't need to be doing it 24/7, 365. That's not a sustainable path. And that's the sure way to sink into burnout, depression, or some really serious illness.
Yeah. You keep talking about support. What if they don't know what is support? What's the best kind of support? And support groups, for example, we haven't mentioned support groups. Are they to be recommended?
And that really depends on the individual. Some people really, you know, enjoy having the activity of support groups. Others prefer to not go out to support groups. Certainly, I think if your loved one's been diagnosed with a certain illness, disease, seeking support, many of those are wonderful support groups like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. You may find some commonality and can develop relationships and have the support. To me, there's no greater support than finding others that are going through something very similar to you, because you have common pathway that you share. Although every individual and every caregiving journey is unique, so definitely seek, you know, you definitely want to seek support. But it really starts with making that list of activities. Have your menu of activities. Find people that you encounter that are willing to support you. Let them choose something to do, and then include them as part of your team, and let people do what they feel they're skilled to do or have the time, treasure, or talent to do. That's really the key to that.
And, you know, today it's never been easier to get support, caregiver, because of the Internet. Online support is everywhere. You just type in caregiver support or Alzheimer's caregiver support or stroke caregiver support. There are support groups for every kind of disability out there, for the disabled and for the... And my wife and I used to attend a stroke support group. In one room, they had it for the survivors, and in the other room, they had it for the caregivers. And we would each talk about each other. The survivors were all complaining about the caregivers, and the caregivers were complaining about the survivors. And I know that sounds negative, but just getting it off your chest. Some of these people don't have any opportunities to vent. And then to, I know what you're talking about. Same thing happened, you know, and to share that commonality is so therapeutic.
It definitely is. It definitely is therapeutic to do that. It's good to vent, let it off, and then, you know, and then move forward. And, you know, it's so great to have, you know, fellow supporters or some confidant and trusted friend that you can do that with. Definitely. You know, it's important to release those feelings. Yeah, just one other thing, a resource you may not be aware of. There's a great free online resource for caregivers. I love to share these things that I know they're out there. It's called lotsahelpinghands.com. The website is L-O-T-S-A helpinghands.com. So lotsahelpinghands.com. When you have your list of activities and stuff to do, this is a great thing to use, because you can create an online support community. I actually did this with my mother, and I do it with other coaching clients. My mother's nickname was Bunny. We called it Bunny's Helpers, which is people who were willing to be part of my support community. They give you an email address, and you basically have an online calendar where you can post needs. People can volunteer to sign up right there. It really makes it easy to coordinate and share communication among members of your support team. And it's a completely free service and a great way to even get family members who are far away involved. When my mom was in the hospital for periods of time, instead of me having to make 5 or 6 or 12 phone calls to people, I could simply type an update note, and with the click of a button, everybody would get my written message about what was happening with my mother. So there, it's a really great free resource that I highly recommend, and I work with my caregivers to set up that I coach. So
that's so cool. Really, it's almost like a registry. Get everybody involved. But what is your favorite story or result, Michael? We've both had stories.
I've had the privilege to support a number of people. Well, one of my favorites is, and it goes back to a sibling relationship. I had a wonderful woman who's in human service, who works in human services like I used to, her mother was aging. And she lived about 5 hours away. Her mother was in New York City, and she lived about 5 hours away. So when her mother had some increasing support needs, she was driving on weekends and taking off time from work to spend time with her mother. My client had a brother who lived in New York City as well, but the mother and her brother had a falling out about a decade earlier, and they didn't talk. And although my client had a relationship, obviously, with both of them. So we processed this through a little bit, and she ended up bringing up, that it would be neat, because of her mother's fragile health, for them to get together. She actually offered and said if they would be willing just to get together for her. And they all, on one Saturday, got together for beer and pizza at mother's house. And it was really interesting. After this reading and this get-together, not to talk about caregiving, but just to get together, because she was coming there and the mother was, having increasing needs. Mother started bringing up things in her basement and around the house that needed to be done. Her son was a contractor. So the very next Tuesday, he came over and started doing some repair work, and that started kind of rebuilding their relationship. And about a little over a month later, he then took her to a medical appointment, thus saving my client a trip out to the location. The reason I like to tell this story is things can change over time. Don't live under the limiting belief that once something is somewhere in a certain place that happened even a decade earlier, that relationships don't have the possibility of change. They do. Okay. So, just as a caregiver, bring it up. Say, you could say something. I love for us to get together. Don't do it for mom. Don't do it for you. Do it for me. Can we just get together and, even talk, and look what could happen from that, just from that getting together for beer and pizza one afternoon. I really loved it because he became involved in the care situation again, and it eased the burden for my client. So, who was still in the primary role, but she had him in a pinch to help, who was nearby. So it was really great.
Sure. So what is the most important step for people to think about now?
Well, people who are listening to this, the really thing you need to think about is make sure your documents are set up. I was just interviewed on another podcast with an elder law attorney, and we really talked about the importance of this, and I highly believe this. If you are an adult over the age of 18 and you're presumed competent, everybody in the family should have those important documents filled out, not just your will. People get wills completed because that's what happens after you're gone. But any of us can become incapacitated at any time, and it's so important to have healthcare proxies, durable powers of attorney, things like that completed, so that if something does happen, you're prepared. I was very fortunate in that my dad, about 3 years before his heart failure incident, had all of those documents put together. So when I needed to step in to care for him, I was listed as his healthcare proxy. I was listed as his power of attorney. I didn't have to waste time and money going to court to get those things put in place. So if the best way to get elders in your family to complete those necessary documents, which are hard, it's taboo, is if everybody in the family takes time to get the documents completed. Any document you can complete can be changed. If your feelings or who you want appointed or everything changes, just complete a new one. But don't delay. Take the time to get those important documents lined up.
That's a great bit of advice there. I know my cousin, who was young, relatively young, he was in his 50s, and he had a heart attack. He needed bypass surgery, which very successfully, and it looked like he was going to be okay. And then all of a sudden, he had a stroke and another stroke, multiple strokes. He went into a coma and he never came out of it. And fortunately, he had filled out his desires of what he wanted with life support, etc. So his did not have to make those decisions. It's so comforting to know, well, this is what he wanted if this ever happened.
Right.
And it just kind of takes the burden off your shoulders because no one in the family can agree. This one wants him to stay alive forever. This one wants to put him out of his misery. This one says, well, you know, and you need this. So, and you don't need a lawyer to do it. You just do it, you sign it, a couple of witnesses, and that's it. So great advice. Any other thoughts to share as we come to a close here? Any takeaways that you want to leave people with?
Absolutely. I'm going to share one of my favorite mantras, which is put chocolate in your pillbox. It's actually a chapter of my book, Put Chocolate in Your Pillbox. And I came up with this chapter because I'm a chocoholic, first of all. I love everything chocolate, especially dark chocolate. But pillboxes are something that became a central part of my life for a while when I was caring for my parents, always making sure they got the right medication at the right time. It's really a metaphor. The pillbox is a metaphor for our calendar. And our calendars, when we're caregivers, tend to be filled with all the have-to things to do, all the, you know, tasks, the medical appointments, you know, and other things that are necessary to keep our household going or our work going and, you know, that our loved ones' needs met. The idea of the chocolate represents joy. And it's really important to sustain your energy in the caregiving role to make sure you put some joy in your calendar and follow through with it. You need to dose yourself with a with regular joy to keep your energy going. Because if week after week and month after month is just spent doing what you think you have to do and fulfilling those caregiving tasks and responsibilities and all the chores, your life is going to become all work, no play, and no joy. So put a little chocolate in your pillbox, start small, look at your calendar, even just plan something for the next week, and then find somebody that will keep you accountable and make sure you do it. That's really the key. So, you know, to sustain your energy, just find some time to do activities that you enjoy, even if it's just meeting a friend at a coffee shop for 30 minutes. Having that in your calendar could go a long way to boost your energy.
Yep, and we all know that all work and no play makes Joe a dull boy.
Exactly right.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Michael. How can someone get a hold of you if they want to learn more or want to get involved in your ministry or read your book or whatever?
Sure. Well, all information along with preview chapters for my book and a free caregiving resource guide are available, which has my top 5 online resources, of which Lots of Helping Hands I mentioned is a part of that, is available at caregivingwithoutregret.com. So that would be the best way, and all of my contact information is there as well. So again, Dave, it's been such a great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Cool. No, the pleasure's mine. Thank you. And thank you again for allowing me to interview you. Listening audience, for tuning in today and every Wednesday live at noon Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all of our shows, including this one, are recorded podcasts, so you can listen on the same link any time of the day or night, 24/7. And they're also on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and iTunes as well, which you can get from my website radio show tab. And just a reminder, when you are on my site, don't forget to take the quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? So that you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get your free copy of my book. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Goodbye. Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.